What is the millennium? Interesting topic. At first I thought, well, this is too simple. It's not enough to talk on. Then after I began to read all of these books, I realized, no, there's too much information on the millennium. Well, the strict definition of millennialism is basically this. The 1,000 years mentioned in Revelation 20, during which Christ is to reign on the earth. Now, I pulled that definition out of several of these books and from dictionaries, and they're all the same. Listen carefully, because the dictionary is the definition is fallacious to begin with. The 1,000 years mentioned in Revelation 20, during which Christ is to reign on the earth. Brethren, the truth of the matter is I am a millennial. I do not believe in millennialism, period. Doesn't exist. I was talking to one brother. He said, well, you know, millennialism, if we wanted to use that term, it'd be all right to use that term, because really all you're talking about is, you know, a figure of speech of 1,000 years, which is just a period of time where Christ is going to reign, but not on the earth. But that's not the definition of millennialism. We don't hold to this doctrine. It is false, and I'm going to set about to prove it, as so many people have already set about to prove. When you're talking about millennialism, you're talking about basically two subcategories. One is premillennialism. The other one is postmillennialism. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on postmillennialism. It's the doctrine that the second coming of Christ will occur after the millennium. And basically, that's a non-entity in the discussion today. Most people don't even think about postmillennialism. They've thrown that doctrine out many years ago. And everybody is basically premillennialist. So when you say, what is the millennial or what is millennialism, you're talking about premillennialism. They're one and the same creature. Premillennialism is that Christ's return will usher in the millennial age, or the 1,000-year reign of Christ on the earth. And that's the definition of it. So when we're talking about millennialism and premillennialism, they really go hand in hand and they go together. What is some of the false doctrine? I just decided I would show you some of the stuff. I'm going to be very careful with my sarcasm. I don't want to offend anybody. Some of the things that were written concerning premillennial doctrine. And the first overhead there, Charlie, if you would. Here's the first overhead I found, or the first quotation I found, going all the way back in history, from Eusebius. I hope I'm pronouncing this fellow's name. Caius, I hope that's how it's pronounced. He says, but Cerinthus, by means of revelations, which he pretended were written by a great apostle, by the way, that great apostle, he says, was John, also falsely pretended to wonderful things as if they were showed him by angels, asserting that after the resurrection there would be an earthly kingdom of Christ, and that the flesh, i.e. men, again inhabiting Jerusalem, would be subject to desires and pleasures, being also an enemy to the divine scriptures, with a view to deceive men. He said that there would be a space of 1,000 years for celebrating nuptial festivals. And this is the farthest I can go back. This is second century. A historical comment made by Cassius. Next overhead, please. Here's the other one that I found. In the same chapter there, Eusebius, Ecclesiastic History, Book 3, Chapter 28. But it is highly probable that Cerinthus, same fellow as we mentioned earlier, the same that establishes the heresy that bears his name, designedly affixed the name of Paul to his own forgery. For one of the doctrines that he taught was that Christ would have an earthly kingdom. And as he was a voluptuary and altogether sensual, he conjectured that it would consist in those things that he craved, in the gratification of appetite and lust. Dionysius, I believe is how it's pronounced. He's the one that made this statement. Also in the second century, incredible that within 100 years, they're already coming up with this idea of the millennial age, and that there would be a 1,000-year reign of Christ on the earth. And I think that history shows that. Well, I bought some books for this lectureship. Bought some books because, well, you know, I kind of needed to study it up. The Millennial Kingdom. Some of y'all already have this one. Written 1959 by John F. Wolvert, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And let me read some of the stuff to let you know what, just exactly where they're coming from. Page 129 of the book. It tells us exactly what their philosophy is concerning how they look at the Scriptures, and how they ascertain the Bible authority for what they teach. He said, premillenarians on the other hand, insist that one general rule of interpretation should be applied to all areas of theology, and that prophecy does not require spiritualization any more than other aspects of truth. They hold that this rule is, listen carefully, the literal grammatical historical method, page 129. Their doctrine is that you translate or you interpret Scripture the same, just whether it's prophecy, whether it's poetry, whether it doesn't matter what it's prose, you translate it, you interpret it all the same. It's all literal, grammatical, historical. Now that's what their foundation is, except on the next page he makes this comment. Premillenarians recognize that all Scripture cannot be interpreted literally. You know, if you're going to contradict yourself, let me tell you, you're going to write a book and kind of contradict yourself, spread it out a few pages, you know. Some people are a little bit slow. They'll forget what they just read, and, you know, 20 pages later, well, you just... Well, anyway, I'm being ugly about that. You know what this is implies? Page 231, here's another one. Got to read this one. This is so blasphemous, brother. Now, I say that as kindly as I can about premillennial doctrine. In the previous study of premillennialism and the church, it was brought out the church is a body of believers in this age distinct in character from the Old Testament saints. Further, he says, it was shown that the present age is a parenthesis or a time period not predicted by the Old Testament and therefore not fulfilling or advancing the program of events revealed in the Old Testament foreview. I can't believe that. You know, I've studied the book of Hebrews chapter 9, and it tells me that it's a pattern, that the Old Testament was a pattern. How can anybody read the Old Testament, or how should anybody read the Old Testament and not see the church? Y'all remember those film strips? Who was it? I forget his name. Anyway, I had film strips and had a record. When I was growing up, I'd be asleep in bed and I could hear that song, Faith of Our Fathers, on it. And part of that record would go ding, and they'd flip the next slide up, and ding, and flip the next slide up. You remember those? My dad and my mother used those a lot. You know something that I heard on that first album? Is that the Old Testament is Christ is coming. Didn't they say that? And then you go to the Gospels, Christ is here. And then the rest of it, Christ is coming again. Do you remember that? If you go back to the Old Testament and you look at the tabernacle and you look at the altar of burnt offering, the brazen altar, and you look at the laver, and you look at the holies and what's in the holies, which is the lampstand and the showbread, table of showbread, and the table of incense, and behind the holy of holies, which is behind the veil, or behind the holies, which is behind the veil, the ark of the covenant, and all those things are representative of items that are in the church, brethren. If you can't see the church and the tabernacle, then you're not understanding the Old Testament. But this man says it wasn't even seen. The church that we have today wasn't even seen in the Old Testament. Oh, no. Basic textbook in premillennial theology? Uh-huh. Oh, yes. And then this final one. You don't think Bibles, reference Bibles, are a danger? You know, we had several years ago, there was a lectureship on translations over at Shenandoah. And some people get upset because the elders get up and say, you know, we want these certain Bibles used, these certain translations used. Listen to what he says, and he's a premillennialist. One of the curious aspects of the current literature on the millennial issue is the singling out of the Scofield Reference Bible for attack. This edition of the Bible, which has had unprecedented circulation, has popularized premillennial teachings and provided ready helps of interpretation. Oh, yes, it has. It has probably done more to extend premillennialism in the last half century than any other volume. Don't go buy a Scofield Bible. Don't go buy it. Well, that's enough of John. We've heard enough of old John Walford. Then, of course, then there's always this bestseller. I got a fifth edition. Boy, preachers, you don't have this on your shelf. You're missing a classic. 101 Reasons Why Christ Will Return in 1988. I got it. Written by a fellow by the name of Deal. What a deal. Well, that's enough of that one too. Number three. Found this as an introduction. Brian Benton, The Doctrines of Matthew, Matthew for the Jews. Introduction page, 1985 is written. This is how far they've gone with this kind of doctrine. This book is written from the standpoint of the belief that Jesus is coming soon to remove his bride from earth to heaven. That's the rapture that we just heard about. And that tremendous event will close the present day of grace and begin the day of judgment. Dispensationalism there. Chaos and conflict will follow the coming of Jesus and his redeemed. And preaching the gospel of grace as we presently know it will cease. That's his emphasis in his book. Out of this chaos and conflict, God will save and call to preach 144,000 young unmarried Jewish men and commission them to preach a different gospel. And a gospel, I think that's a misspelling there, and a gospel of the kingdom once preached by John the Baptist, Jesus, and 12 apostles. These young Jews will preach throughout the entire world for 3.5 years. And one of the books of the Bible they will employ most often will be Matthew's gospel. You know, that's kind of interesting. I use Matthew's gospel today. Well, anyway, it is with these young men in mind that this book is written. Now, this is how far these people are gone with this doctrine of millennialism. It's incredible that they come up with it. Oh, and then here's another classic. I don't know if you can see. I tried to put this on overhand, and I just couldn't. I don't know if y'all can see that. Can y'all see that? Rapture. This is a half-page ad I photocopied out of the Express News. I can't remember. It was prior to October 28, 1992, because, hey, that's when the rapture happened. You missed it. We missed it. Yeah, I didn't see any cars have accidents. You know, maybe they're not as righteous. Never mind. Jesus is coming in the air. Jesus is coming in the air. Where's that other statement? This is really good. In 1999, human history will end. You didn't realize it. We've been in 7 years of tribulation. I tried to call them. I was living in San Antonio at that time. I tried to call them October 29th. The phone had been disconnected. Far-fetched. God's prophetic plan overhead. It just goes on and on. Here's a diagram out of their own book. I thought that this was probably the best diagram that represents millennialism or premillennial doctrine as best I could. Don't try to make sense out of it, because none of these fellas can. You buy a different book, it doesn't matter. It's all different. They change from one to the next. They don't know what's going to happen. They think they do. I thought the most ironic book was the title of this one, The Millennial Maze. I just pictured this maze with no way out and no way to get to the prize in the center, and all these guys just running through this maze. That's what the millennialism is in a nutshell. It's sad, isn't it? Well, I began to work on this lesson and I was wondering how in the world, where am I headed with this stuff? And I went to a book, Premillennialism, True or False, edited by Wendell Winkler. Written in 1978, there's a bunch of them sitting on that table in that book room. There's a bunch of them sitting in that table in the book room. And in that book, I think it was on page 209 or 208, you'll find a chapter written by Brother Robert Taylor. In fact, his topic was, what is the millennium? So guess where you get all this material? Don't think I've come up with this like this some kind of original thing. If I get an original thought, I go take a bath. Because, you know, so here's this stuff. One of the first things he came up with. Next overhead, please. What the millennium is not. What the millennium is not and why. Number one, and some of y'all are already touched on this. The millennium is not the initial giving nor the restoration of physical Palestine to those people who have Abrahamic blood. That's not what the millennium is. And you can go to the scriptures and prove it. In Genesis 12, chapter 1 through 3, Genesis 26, 2 through 4, 28, 13 through 15. That promise was given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it talks about three things in every time that promise is made. It talks about a people, it talks about a place, and it talks about a person in that promise. You got it? A people, a place, and a person. And the people are the Israelites. The place is Palestine, and the person is Christ. And every one of those promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were fulfilled. Look with me with Joshua. Go over to the book of Joshua and look with me at this book concerning the filling of these prophecies. Joshua, the 21st chapter. Turn quickly to it, Bob. Joshua 21st chapter, verse 43. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers. And they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about, according to all that he sware unto their fathers. And there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. They failed not out aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. The prophecy was fulfilled. And the prophecy was that you will have this forever. But the prophecy was conditional. And we all remember what happened to the Jews. We all remember that the Israelites strayed and were carried off into Assyrian captivity, Babylonian captivity. And after they returned, there was no more prophecy. There was no promise on that prophecy any longer. No, all of that was done with. The millennium has nothing to do with the land promises of Israel. It just galls me to see our own country and our politicians going jumping hog wild over what's going on in Israel. We're talking about that today at lunch with some good people here. Every time Israel, anytime the Jews do anything, why, we just bend over backwards and give them everything out of our pockets. And it's all because some religious people come up with this idea that they're still God's chosen people. But they're not God's chosen people, and he's not going to come reign over them again. They rejected him, they crucified him, and therefore God rejected them. The millennium is not the end of the church age and the beginning of the kingdom period. We've already heard a lot of these scriptures. Matthew 16, chapter verse 18, 19. Christ tells Peter and his disciples, upon this rock I will build my church. In verse 19, he turns right around and tells them, and I will give you the keys to the kingdom. And right there in those two passages of scripture, he uses the word church and the word kingdom synonymously. And that, as has already been shown. Also, Luke, the 22nd chapter, verse 29 through 30. Jesus placed the Lord's Supper in the kingdom. Jesus placed the Lord's Supper in the kingdom. Well, then why in the world are all these people taking the Lord's Supper, even though they only take it twice a year? Why? If they're not in the kingdom. You see that that's not correct. Colossians 1:13. That one was quoted earlier. I told you I was going to get into somebody else's lesson. They got into mine. But anyway, Colossians 1:13, we've been translated out of the power of darkness into the kingdom of his dear Son. Well, if it doesn't exist yet, then what have we been translated into? What silliness to believe that we do not have the kingdom yet. John the 3rd chapter, verse 3 through 5, Christ said you must be born again to get into the kingdom. I wonder about all these born again Christians, which is a little bit redundant. Well, how are they born again? What are they born again into? Well, if the kingdom's not here, then what are they born into? What silliness to believe that the kingdom period, at the end of the millennium, is the end of the church age, the beginning of the kingdom period. The church and the kingdom are synonymous terms. It's not the beginning of Christ's reign on David's throne in earthly Jerusalem. Don already got all over that one. I thought, man, I got a jewel here. Jeremiah, the 22nd chapter. God said, Coniah will not have any seed reign any longer in David's throne in Judah. Any of his seed will not do it. Use the word Coniah, which is it's also understood as Jeconiah. Chapter 24, verse 1, also calls him Jeconiah. And Matthew 1:11 says that Christ is a product. He is a generation out of Coniah. Now, does the Bible contradict itself? If Christ is going to come and reign on an earthly throne in Jerusalem, in Judah, on David's throne, then Jeremiah 22nd chapter is not true. But yet the same Bible they get that thing out of, which is false, says that it's not going to happen. You see the contradiction that they run themselves into. Number four, the millennium is not a literal thousand-year reign of Christ on earth. Revelation says nothing of Christ reigning on earth. And of course, that's been said in the last three lectures that I've heard. I don't know if you heard them or not. But Christ is not coming to reign on earth 1,000 years. Why would he want to? That's the question I would ask. Why would he want to? What, when he's been in heaven, he wants to come back here? I often wonder about Lazarus. He'd been dead. He's a good man. By implication, he was not in torments. I wonder how he felt being brought back. I know what the prophet said when he was brought back. Scared that witch half to death. She didn't believe he, you know, brought back Samuel. Samuel said, why are you bringing me back? I don't want to be back. Why would Christ want to come and dwell and reign on the earth 1,000 years? Especially since he's not even going to be here. 2 Peter 3, chapter, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Seeing that these things are all going to be dissolved. It goes on, verse 11, verse 12, that we ought to be better Christians. We ought to live a better life, understanding that all this stuff's going to be wiped out. There won't be any earth here for him to reign on. No, the millennium is not a literal 1,000-year reign of Christ on the earth. It's not a fanciful fairyland or a golden utopia. And they love, oh boy, they wrote a lot about the word utopia in there. You know where utopia came from? I'm not a Greek scholar. I hope I'm pronouncing these right, Bob. But utopia comes from a Greek word, utopos, no place. I find that kind of ironic. They're looking for no place. My brother, I give my brother a hard time because he's been preaching in Utopia, Texas for some time. I tell him, you don't preach anywhere. It's no place. They talk about wild animals lay down and live peaceably with one another. I want to know, how's an animal like a lion going to feed himself? What's he going to feed himself on? Won't be any of these other creatures. What silliness. Brother Taylor made this comment in his book. He said, God's plan is not designed to change the animals in the jungle. It is designed to change the jungle that is in men. I like that one. That's a good one. And this one, it's not in the book, so write it down. Like I said, I don't know if it's original or not. I'm sure it's not. But the millennium is not a 1,000-year reign of man on the earth. A lot of people talk about Christ coming and reigning 1,000 years on the earth. Nowhere in the scriptures does it teach that man is going to come and reign 1,000 years on the earth. Well, that's preposterous. Look at Hebrews 9, chapter, verse 27. As I'll get it spit out. Hold on. And it is appointed unto man once to die, and then the judgment. What? Premillennial doctrine, millennialists believe that God's going to resurrect man after they're dead and have them live 1,000 years. And then, I guess, they're going to die again and go to judgment. Why, that's silliness. No, as it is appointed unto man once to die. James 2, chapter, verse 26 tells us what death is. Death is separation of body and spirit. As it is appointed unto men once to die, then the judgment. No, the millennium is not a 1,000-year reign of man on the earth. Oh, I know that these millennialists, they love Revelation chapter 20. They call it, that's basically their sugar stick. You know, they love to go sucking on it a little bit. But you know something? There's a lot that Revelation 20 does not say. Now I'm really getting into somebody else's lesson because there's a whole lecture on Revelation 20, but it's after me. But anyway, it does not mention the second coming of Christ. Revelation 20 doesn't mention the second coming of Christ. It doesn't mention the bodily resurrection. It doesn't mention the reign on earth. It doesn't mention a literal throne of David. And brethren, get this. It doesn't mention us. The people who are reigning in Revelation 20 chapter are those been beheaded. If you're gonna make it literal, that's what old Johnny over here said. Just a literal grammatical historical method. If it's gonna be literal, well, you need to go find somebody to lop off your head in order to reign with Christ here on this earth. Doesn't mention you and I, and doesn't mention a lot of people who are gone. Who weren't beheaded for the Christ. What about Stephen? He was stoned. He wasn't even beheaded. Oh, no. It's not as sweet to them as they think it is. But I suppose the greatest chapter, not the greatest chapter, I shouldn't say it that way, one of a wonderful chapters, Matthew 25th chapter. Now, I noticed that there was a lecture on Matthew the 24th chapter, and that's good because, see, this kind of flows right after chapter 24. Matthew 25. I'm going to go through the whole thing. And since, hey, I'm the last lecture, I got till 4:30, don't I? Oh, David just looked at me. To begin with, let's look at verse 1 of chapter 25. Then shall the kingdom of heaven... Now, we've already talked about the fact that the kingdom is equivalent to the church. Mark the 9th chapter, verse 1, Christ says, some of you standing here, you've heard this one several times today, some of you standing here shall not depart. You're going to taste the power. You're going to see the kingdom. And it's going to come with power. Mark 9:1. Of course, we've already talked about Matthew 16, 18 and 19. Colossians 1, 13. The kingdom and the church are synonymous terms. So what is he saying? Then shall the kingdom of heaven, then shall the church be like. This is what he's saying right here. Verse 1. Be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamp and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. And they that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. And the wise took oil in their vessels and with their lamps. And the bridegroom tarried. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there not be enough for us that you and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. And afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Lord, wherein the Son of Man cometh. Interesting, one of these books says we can't know the day and the hour, but we can know the month and the year. What silliness. What are we talking about? We're talking the church is like 10 virgins. The church is like 10 virgins. 5 were prepared, 5 were unprepared, and when Christ came, the 5 that were unprepared did not go into the bride chamber. What? Well, the parallel there is talking about half the church not going to be ready when Christ comes. Now, it's a parable. We don't want to take that and make it literal like some other people would do and say, one half the church right down the middle is not going to be prepared. I think what it's teaching us is that there's a lot of people on the day of judgment who are in the kingdom will not go to heaven because they're not prepared. Their lamps have gone out. The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country. I'm not going to read all of this. Y'all can read it if you want to. You've already heard a bit about it. Parable of the talents. 3 men. One was given 5, one was given 2, and one was given 1. Depending on their ability. And we all know the story, what happened. The one that had the one went and buried his talent. Reminds me of that lady who went to a preacher and said, you know, I only have one talent, and that is I like to talk about other people. And he said, well, I'm sure the Lord wouldn't mind you burying that talent. That parable is talking about 1/3 of the church, when Christ comes, it will not get into the heaven because they have buried their abilities. This is sobering. Because this is not even talking about the world. This is talking about the kingdom. Now let us look at verse 31. This is all in the same context. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. And before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, and the goats on the left. Then shall the King say unto them on His right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Verse 41 looks on the left side. Then shall He say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. Interesting comment. Hell was not even prepared for mankind. It was prepared for the devils and his angels. Unfortunately, there's several men and women going to end up there. For I was a hunger, and ye gave me, etc., and so on. Then shall he answer unto them and say, verse 45, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. I want you to find. I would love for some of these guys to sit down and look at Matthew the 25th chapter and find 1,000-year reign on the earth in it. It's not there. Millennialism is 1,000-year reign of Christ on earth, and it is false. I thank you for your attention.